into sports.
20 yards out, Urs to shoot, don't shoot! Oh, what a goal from Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah. No, I'm...
Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports. Ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network.
Now, you're very welcome along. So it's another All-Ireland football final upon us. Not one that we've seen before. December. No crowds, very strange, but a familiar pairing nonetheless, and we have a brilliant show lined up for you this evening. We are here as ever with thanks to Super Value, and as part of their Support Where You're From campaign, a brilliant initiative for the final this weekend coming. They've been working with primary schools across Dublin and Mayo and Crumlin Children's Hospital as well, so there's some brilliant artwork created by all the kids, and it's going to be on display in Croke Park this weekend for the All-Ireland Football Final, so keep an eye out for that. We are starting off with the Dubs, and these two need no introduction, but I'll give them one anyway. We'll massage their egos. So we have Paul Flynn, 6 All-Irelands, 10 Leinsters, 5 National Leagues, 4 All-Stars in a row. He retired back in 2019. We have Bernard Brogan with 7 All-Irelands, 13 Leinsters, 5 National Leagues, 4 All-Stars, 2010 Player of the Year. Gentlemen, you're very welcome.
Joe, how are you doing?
Good evening, Joe.
Well, aren't you great, huh?
Sounds impressive.
Wait until Conn and Fenton retire, then it'll sound rubbish.
I know.
So, Paul reliably tells me, Bernard, that your memory is rubbish, and actually he helped you write the book and deserves some royalties.
Yeah, there's not many books been sold with all, whatever in lockdown, but he's definitely going to get a bit of dinner and a few pints. I suppose, yeah, that was the most enjoyable bit, catching up with Flinner, Amo did the same, Ross McConnell, Mick McCauley, Declan Lally. So getting to catch up with all the stories of those guys is the best part of the whole thing and just relive a few memories.
And what's your memory like for games? Would you remember them well? Would you have good recall or a little bit sketchy?
Very sketchy. I've had some amazing days in blue and been very privileged to play with them for so long, but the things I remember about are the crack, is the stories, the trips you went on, the hard training, the slog, and I suppose the mates and stuff, that the people were a big part of it for me.
Yeah, I think that it's the same. Like I know this sounds a bit cliche, but like at the end of every season, regardless of whether you won or lost, it was a bit of an anticlimax for us. When we had a good group and, you know, we enjoyed the train and the journey, as we call it, and you got to the destination then, whether it be a win or lose, you know, it was that bit of an anticlimax because we had such a good group. But luckily enough, we're all still tight enough too, so we keep in contact. But I would say your memory of games is pretty poor, if I'm being honest.
It is.
And yours is good, Paul, is it? You have a good recall for it?
I wouldn't say I'm as good as some guys, like Paddy Andrews, and some guys would be just, you know, they remember nearly every minute, but I would recall all the games and the pivotal moments and, you know, the build-up to them and what were the kind of challenges we were looking at, whatever we were going to face and stuff. So I think if, you know, when we get Bernard talking, he'll remember a bit more, but it'll be interesting to see where we go tonight.
Well, Bernard, can we start with the recent interview you did with Jack McCaffrey? It was a brilliant interview, gave us a great insight into maybe the most interesting footballer in the country, certainly one of the more rounded ones. Obviously, what jumped out at everyone was his rationale for walking away, you know, and he talked really vividly about shaking hands, I think it was with David Moore at the full-time whistle against Kerry, realising there wasn't extra time and almost thinking, I'm done here. The tank is empty. And you understand his reasons, you understand his job, you understand where he's coming from, and it's probably a very mature view on his part to take, a rounded view. I'm curious, do you think there are others in that Dublin camp who have soldiered for a long time, who have done the 5 in a row, who are, you know, not a million miles away from Jack when it comes to empty tank?
Yeah, I think I was chatting to a few people on this week, and I saw a couple of comments come in and say, how tough it is for you to prep yourself for another All-Ireland final, and that's a fair comment to make. But Jack has just been himself. Like, you live your own reality, and he talked about trying to get in and out of his head, and he kind of struggled to just get his head tuned in for it. And if that's his reality, then that's fair enough. Like, he's very honest in his conversation. So you never know. Like, even though they're amazing times and very lucky to be part of it, it doesn't take away from somebody's mindset in that situation. So that was the first thing to say, I suppose, and something that kind of really resonated with me as people kind of start to question his motives. But yeah, like it's a big commitment. Amateur football, and a lot of Twitter now saying, "How is it amateur? It's more professional than amateur." But we all have our day jobs, we all have our families, and we all have our interests outside of football. We love football, we devote a lot of our lives to it, and that's probably why we get everyone that you'll talk to tonight across the sports, across the counties, all give up their lives to go after a cause because they love it and they want to put on that jersey for the pride of where they're from and their family and all those things. It doesn't mean it's not tough along the way. It doesn't mean there's times when you don't have motivation. It doesn't mean there's times when you're down the dumps because things aren't going well for you. And I've been there on all sides when things have gone really well and literally you're on cloud nine, and I've been there when things have been like the lowest points, you know what I mean? So it is a roller coaster, and people don't realise because you're just looking at you in Croke Park or wherever you are and think that how could you ever have a challenge? Like, aren't you very lucky to be out there? And you are, but Jack had an amazing talent and he worked hard. Dublin knows him nothing, or the GA owe him nothing. Mm. He's entertained and he has brought us loads of success, me and Flinner. So yeah, I think that, I don't know if anyone else feeling like that. Paul, please speak for himself. I was a long time there, and it's probably a reason for my fatigue, but I still wanted to be there. I felt I could add value, and I was trying to motivate myself and say, this is the end and it's coming close and just enjoy it. Paul left a little bit earlier that summer because he probably had the same. I was like, I just don't know if I can commit that energy and that enthusiasm to something that isn't as burning maybe as it was once in my life, you know?
Yeah, and I like come in there like on that, but I do recall, man, when we were in 2016, that's the only other replay I can, you know, that really resonates with me when, I don't know whether you remember or not, but we didn't have a good final. We probably didn't have our best season that year, and there was a lot of talk around that we were both going to get dropped for the replay. We were struggling. Like it was tough. I remember that replay. I wasn't looking forward a lot, like, you know, to come back training. And the weather was getting a little bit worse, and the motivation just—you do build yourself up for, you know, when it comes to a final. You say, right, well, you know, there's no more training. You're trying to empty your tank, and then you have to go back to try and find something for another 2 weeks. It is a hard place to be, but once you get back into the rhythm of it, but we found that hard. That's 2016, I remember. And so when I actually heard, I listened to the podcast the other day. I thought it was absolutely brilliant, by the way. And Jack always gets a good interview, but. I thought back to 2016 and I said, yeah, I completely resonated with what he was saying. And like you said, for me, when I came to it, was, I don't see Jack as being at the end. I just think that he just, you know, has lost a little bit of motivation. But for me, and I loved hearing the fact that he said he could find it again, and no one wants to find it more than he does. But for me, when it was in 2019, I just knew it was gone. And if I didn't have it, I didn't have the talent that he has that would get him through. I needed every bit of my motivation and my energy and my, you know, drive to be able to compete still. So,
because Paul, those 2 weeks, Paul, for the replay, they're about more than just training Tuesday and Thursday.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like I, you know, with Jim and the setup the Jim has, you know, had was really remarkable. Like how we got so much out of people and. We probably trained less than every other team on the pitch, but we worked really hard in relation to analysis, reviewing games, understanding the opposition, understanding ourselves, our tactics, our game plans. And that takes a lot of work. And I didn't really enjoy that part of it as much. And Bernard, you might come in here, but we didn't do that at the start of our career. It kind of was layered on year, but when it came to even the start of gym setup to the end of this, it was, you know, chalk and cheese in relation to the amount of work that we had to do. And some guys just had more capacity to be able to do that and perform and train hard. Personally, I found it a little bit more difficult to, you know, to motivate myself to do all that kind of work along the side. I just really enjoyed, I suppose, training hard and pushing the body to its limits. So.
Yeah, and that's back to where I say there's so much involved in playing at that level now for everyone. I know you've Barry later on and Stephen, and they'll have, I'm sure they're in very similar boats. You devote so much energy and emotion to an All-Ireland final, and you're young lads, and part of it, as I say, is the journey, and there's all the excitement of what's after it, and the family and all that stuff that gets put on hold. And I know it's only a small thing, but there's so much gets kicked down the road, and it just is a hard place to go. And then you have to do a big analysis of the game and look over stuff, as Paul said, 2016, I did get dropped that time. Paul held on and was right to do so. I think me and Mick were dropped. And that was a tough place to go, you know what I mean? You're trying to get the energy back up, and you've off the bad result or a bad personal game or something like that. I totally resonate where he came from.
And Bernard, I mean, the five in a row is a thing. You know, it was a thing for Kilkenny, and whether you guys talked about it much or not, I don't know that year. But you were in and around the camp, obviously, across that year. Was there an extra something, weight on the shoulders? Did it sap a little something extra from players? Do you think the five in a row year, is that part of where you think Jack is coming from? Because he wasn't just talking about that moment. I mean, he said it had been brewing a little bit over the summer.
Yeah, like there was obviously everyone was very aware of where what situation was and what it was about. I don't think we discussed at the start of the year, put the elephant to bed, I suppose, understood it and just got about our business in a very normal manner. There were situations I felt during the year that where decisions were made and the management were looking at it in a certain way and trying to get the best out. We didn't get into a National League final. We played a lot of the games with our top 15 guys. Jim probably looking for results. So I felt a person, I'm going to speak from my own point of view, I felt there was, I'd say more so maybe from the management than from the players. Obviously the players were trying to get out there and play, and the competition between ourselves was so strong. Paul was in that National League and it was a tough place. Not one many of us saw game time. I needed to play to see game time. Obviously I was a bit older. There's other lads maybe as well that were a bit frustrated. But for the players, it's just about getting after it. I don't think it held any extra weight on our shoulders. It was bonus territory for me. And I suppose, again, me thinking about me personally, I was trying to prove myself that I was still able to compete and add value to the team. So literally playing an All-Ireland five in a row team was way down my list of priorities in that group. I wanted to prove to the guys that I could add value to them. Like I spent a lot of time trying to prove myself to the individuals, because the group is what mattered to us. And the last thing I thought about was winning All-Ireland. So that's a fact.
Okay. Well, look, hopefully we'll see him back again and he gets a bit of hunger back. And obviously his job is very demanding as well. Here's a terribly unfair question. Then you've been in there. Jack is gone. I won't ask you for one, because one's like virtually impossible. Bernard, who are the two most, and I'll use the word influential, you know, because I'm not just talking in the 70 minutes, but all-round influential players in that Dublin team at the moment?
Well, I'll give you two, and maybe Paul will give you two, because there's not only two, and we'll be leaving some behind. But for me, influence means a certain thing. As you say, it's not maybe the person who scores all the points or the person who gets man of the match every day. Two people, obviously. Stephen Cluxton is obviously a massive influence, because he does what he kind of... He doesn't do a massive amount of talking. When he talks, everyone listens. But he just leads by his example, in his preparation, in his attitude, and in his drive and desire to be the best at what he is and what he can bring to the team. The other guy for me of influence around the group is Johnny Cooper. He's a guy, and I love triggers in games, and I love to ask people about their triggers and understanding it. And I remember Johnny Cooper said in one thing, it was being unrivaled was his trigger word or his ambition as a Dublin player. And I just love that, unrivaled. Like, and genuinely, there was nobody who prepared as much as him. Paul talked about the analysis, the stuff that maybe the old me and him, the older statements didn't like as much. His viewpoint, his preparation, his prehab, his effort in the gym, on the pitch, just was unrivaled. He actually genuinely, in my view, lived that. He lived his word, which is such an amazing place to be for him. And I know he's in his personal life. I see he's he's into psychology and he's gone after that and he's actually changed his life. And I think that Dublin team and the culture that was created has changed people's lives. Mm. The biggest compliment I got was from Paul about my, he said I helped him look at himself as more of a person than maybe just football, more outside of work, outside of the pitch and personal life and stuff like that and work life. And it's great to see people like Johnny, like Kev Mack did the same. He went after sports psychology because that mindset that we had, that growth mindset, made a difference on them and created something in their head that said, geez, I'm going to go after this and I'm interested in this. And I love to see that. Mick McCauley works in Dublin inner city. He's a yoga teacher and he spends his life helping kids and the youth around Dublin One, you know what I mean? So that's I'm sorry, I named five or six there. But
yeah, you've totally cheated there.
Sorry.
No, it's a great answer. And actually a brief tangent, I remember... Paul, you were in, we did an interview a couple of years ago and you were talking about being in the dressing room, looking around, seeing lads with college educations doing big things in their careers and that almost prompting you to think, well, actually, maybe I should strive in that area of my life as well.
Big time. And so when I joined the Dublin squad, I didn't have a degree. I was working on site as a plumber and everything was fine. And like, you know, but it was very difficult to be able to balance both coming to training in a steel toe boots, wrecked tires, and guys are coming up in suits and but everyone had degrees around you. They were all educated, they were all on a journey, and I think we've probably taken that to another level even with the most current squad. And Jim really valued, like, you know, the life on and off the pitch. He used to have the triangle of your physical life, your personal life and your professional life, and he really did value it. Now he worked hard and all on the pitch, but he definitely left his space to do the other pieces too. So you know, I think that was critically important for us as a team in our growth as well, because we also had then is, you know, hyper educated guys who were tuned in when we were talking about whether it be tactics or whether it be, you know, I suppose trying to raise the standards around the place. They all got it too, so that was really, really important. But if you go, do you want me to ask my question on the two guys, because I think the two guys he said are definitely influential, but for me, like, Macker is one of the most, James McCarthy, just doesn't say a lot, but just goes about his business. And, you know, when he arrives for training, he's there. And funny, like, we used to sit beside one another on the bus for every game. And I remember when I returned after back surgery, I think it was in 2018. And I was away for a couple of weeks. And I literally came back onto the bus for a couple of months. And I came back onto the bus for the first game. I think it was Monaghan in the quarterfinals. And I sat down at the back of the bus. Actually, I sat down beside you, Bernard, and Shane O'Hanlon, who would be, like, you know, managing operations on the day, kind of like, you know, and he goes, is everybody on the bus? And Macker jumps up. Flitter's still inside, right? And I was down the back of the bus. He was absolutely freaked because I wasn't sitting beside him, and he had his, that was our routine, you know, and when he knew I was back, he was superstitious about the whole thing. But he, to me, was just, you know, and still is. You can see it. He's the leader of the pack. He's an absolute animal of a man. The way he trains, pushes himself, you know, time and time again, shows up, you know, and he's stylish along the way too. The way he plays, but at the moment, for me, it's Fento. Yeah. I just see Paul O'Connell and Fento. When I look at him now, it's just grown and grown. The minute I seen him, his first game. Was, I don't know whether you remember, it was a charity game up in Kingspan Park, I can't remember whereabouts it was now in Ulster, but anyway, it was a charity game, and it was his first game he played, and he just played really well. And from then, that day on, he's just driven, you know, the standards within the camp. And, you know, I know there's a lot of talk about him at the moment, but he's just, to me, I think he's the best player that ever played the game, you know, and he's got everything, you know. He's got the physique, he's got the skill, his attitude is just off the charts, you know, in and around the place. He just, you know, he doesn't be shouting and screaming, always taking notes, very studious, high IQ in the game, always looking to grow on and off the pitch. I just think he's the guy now who's just leading the way there, and you just see him on the pitch. He's demanding, just reminds me of Paul O'Connell. You know, it's just, it's great to see his development right from the start. So,
geez, that is high praise. That is high praise. And yeah, I don't even know, I mean, you gave a long list there. I mean, his point taking is almost underestimated because he makes it look so damn easy. He doesn't get credit for it.
I don't, like, he'd be 45 yards out. It's like he's doing a solo. He just flicks the ball and they all travel over, you know. But he seems to have just kind of, what I see this year anyway, is just, he's just like, he's letting it go, you know. He's just, he looks like he's enjoying his football and he's going for it. And that's great to see. When you see somebody there just in the zone, he seems to be doing really well. So, but there are, like, I have to say, Bernard, like, you know, there's always a group of good people knocking around. Like, you know, if someone wasn't having a good day, there were other guys who were going to just drive the standards. So I think that's what the power of the pack was, that there was a collective, you know, understanding of what our standards were. There was a collective buy-in to our culture. And I know that sounds a bit cliche, but everyone did kind of come to train, you know, switched on. And if there was someone having an off day, one of the so-called leaders, someone else would just step up and, you know, drive it. So that kind of kept the standards quite high.
Bernard, Brian Fenton may be the best Gaelic footballer of all time. Do you want to weigh in on that? That's serious. High, you know, it's incredibly high praise, obviously.
Yeah, I agree.
Do you? Really? Okay.
Yeah. I mentioned it during the year on Twitter or something like that, and obviously the Jack O'Shea conversation came in, and I didn't live through his time. I saw some videos of times but when my dad played and stuff like that. I think he won 2 or 3 player of the year, something like that, and obviously an awesome character. People would question it, Brian Fenton, that he's on obviously on a really strong team, and that obviously helps. There's loads of amazing players that went throughout the years, and Brendan Murphy and Carlo, or Paddy Keenan and Loud, where these players drove their county for a long time, and maybe just in a great team they could have been exceptional, and that's a fair argument. But for me, I agree, he is so smooth on the ball. His endurance is frightening, and the KMs he's putting up in a game, you wouldn't believe if you look at the tracker and the level of work rate he's putting into it. But he looks like he's gliding, and you mentioned it there, his striking of the ball, which I prided myself in trying to be his best I could be. He is effortless, and it's just so natural. And I love that he didn't play minor. I love the whole narrative around Brian Fenton. He is such an inspirational character for kids, for anyone playing the game. That and he's so humble in everything, and a smart kid. But no, I couldn't agree more. And James McCarthy, another guy, we were having pints in the Kev Max pub. Remember we had that sing song after 2018, Flinner,
Dropping Well,
and Mary Black sang. It was one of these epic sessions. And James McCarthy was just in the corner, he always is, head down, doesn't get too excited. And he just said to me, he grabbed me at one stage during the night, and he said, we started this together, we finish it together next year. And I couldn't. That was the end. I had to come back for basically 2019. So,
imagine.
If James tells you to do something, you do it. So that was
exactly. Man, a few words.
Those are the little moments, aren't they? They illustrate the bond. I always remember seeing on TV, Paul, where you've just won the All Ireland, and Dermot Connolly comes up to you, and he, you know, excited, and says five, and you just go six, and he's like six. You know,
yeah.
And the sense of fun that came with it all, you know?
Yeah, that was, I do recall that one. And like, and people often say when you're outside the bubble, right? And which I am now and Bernard is now, you kind of get a bit more perspective about the way other people think. When you're inside it, you don't, like, you're just thinking about the here and now, you're in the present. You definitely aren't thinking about, like, even, you know, where we were very much focused on game to game and trying to really get a few minutes, or, you know, stay in the squad or whatever like that. So I got that when I thought about it, like, the Bernard was just like, when Dermot was just like, you know, flustered, and he's like five, and it was six, or maybe it was four, and it was three, whatever.
Maybe, you left you one short anyway.
It was one short, yeah. And but yeah, no, look, that's, it definitely wasn't in any way from his side trying to come across as being disregarding of them. He was caught in the moment. Mm. But yeah, no, like, them little things are special. Like, there's a, you know, every year there was always like a kind of a song that I nearly relate to the year. I can't remember them all now, but you know, a lot of those, Bernard, you might know the name of the song, but remember them Clingan Day songs? And they were always kind of little, so one of the younger lads would have brought them in, they were a dance tune, and they would always kind of be the team tune of the year for us. So if we ever had a video pre or post games, like that was the team song, and everyone was like, you know, raring to go for the match. But I do recall there was one there that was circulating around 2015. And do you remember that final against Kerry, and it was in the rain, and it wasn't the best game, but the conditions were so poor, and I think we won by 2 points. But afterwards, that was a big win for us. Like, and I actually, when I was watching the Limerick game on Sunday, it brought me back to that moment, because I'd say the Limerick guys, not known from talking to them, but I'd say that they felt last year they kind of didn't do themselves justice, or they should have done better, and they just slipped up pretty much. And we always had that feeling on 2014 that we just didn't finish off the job. And it was a long winter, it was a long pre-season, it was a long league. And then when we got to the 15 final, it was lashing rain and we're playing Kerry, and you know, it could have went either way. And even though I felt that if we really played our best, we could have, you know, we were in a better place than them at that time. But anyway, we get over the line and we're back in the dressing room. We're dancing around the dressing room, like with just a group. And, you know, there's a speaker playing, that song comes on. And that moment, like, you know, gives me the chills even now thinking about it. Like that, no, it's away from the crowd. It's away from like the, you know, functions and all that. But it was just a group, everyone from the kit man to the stats man. And there was around 50 people in the room, just in a huddle dancing around to that song. And that was when you said, you know, they're the moments that really resonate with me. And Bernard, you might remember that one, do you?
Yeah, like those, I love those parts of the, we were lucky enough to win a few All-Irelands and come into the dressing room after, and you're kind of just soaking it up and people are doing interviews, you're hanging around for a good while, and then everyone comes into the group, you do a team picture, but then you start, a few tunes come in and the lads start dancing and a bit of play acting. That's a really nice moment that we've had over the years. And I think it's always one where, you look back on, you'll have those memories for years. But I love that when that tune comes on that you've been slogging, because you might be playing a training or it might be on a training camp, you'd be playing it as socially, and it just reminds you of the year and getting over the line. So yeah, no, I love those moments.
Yeah. What was the song you said, Paul, that year? I didn't catch it.
Clingandy. I don't know the name of the song. That was the name of, like, it was, is it, you know, I don't even know. Is it DJ or is it, I'm pretty sure it's DJ. It sounds like really old now. You know, it's actually embarrassing.
A lot of years, Philly McMahon would have drove a lot of the tunes. I think he managed the Spotify or the tunes, okay, in the dressing room for warm-up. So Philly McMahon's your man for the tunes over the last 4 or 5 years.
It sounds like Maniac is the last song Paul can remember.
Well, look, you know, if you want me to do a rendition,
you can. I've seen him.
So, look, there's obviously a Mayo elephant in the room here. Once again, Mayo in the final. I mean, just to recap, this has been the greatest football rivalry of my lifetime and a lot of people's lifetimes, I think. The 2012 semi-final, Mayo come through that one. 2013 final, Dublin win by a point. There's a theme with all these games. They're very, very close. Dublin by a point. The 2015 semi-final is an epic. Dublin are down by 4 on 55 minutes and score 3 late goals to come through. 2016, another epic, the draw. 2 own goals from Mayo. Mayo scored 15 points in that game to Dublin's 2-9. And then the replay, another epic, Dublin win by a point. And then 2017, there are GPSs flying, Dean Rock's kicking a free. And again, it's a single point. A lot of people think 17 is the best match they've ever seen. So, like, it's off the chart stuff. It's so good. Bernard, what is it that Mayo brought that ye kind of, you know, that where they got closer to you guys and pushed you guys more than anyone else? On the outside, we all say, oh, they can match Dublin's physicality. For you, what was it they brought that ye knew, oh, this is either a draw or a 1 point win?
I think they were fearless and they were very strong, they had a very strong mindset about what they were about. I think the way the game has been played over the last number of years, there's certain aspects of the game that give you an advantage. A really good keeper with a strong kick out. I think one of the most important lines of the pitch is the half-back line. I think it's been one of Mayo's strengths over the years. We obviously had a Jack James and different players over the years, they're like John Small, they're able to break the line to add to that forward momentum, but also get back and have the engine. The Lee Keegans, the Durkins, these type of players have just been massive. Kevin McLaughlin coming back into the defence and then attacking forward. I just think they've had a really high quality of player. I suppose the respect is there, and I know it's easy. And I remember Alan said to me about respect. We were obviously very close to the Kerry guys because of the relations and my mum and all that. And he said, it's very easy in the noughties, it's very easy for them to respect us and to be good pals with us when they keep beating us all the time. We'll see what they're like when we get on the other side of them. But in fairness, they were just as decent. And I have massive respect for those men, genuine respect for them men. And I know Barry's on the call later and since Stephen, genuine. And someone will say it's easy for you to say that and be humble when you have the All-Ireland medals in your pocket. Mm. But that takes a bit of luck. It takes a little bit of what a magic, whatever it was the difference. You say there were one kick of a ball, most more often than not, that got us over the line. So for me, yeah, I just think they had a gritty resolve. They had a really top quality group of players, and just certain lines in the pitch they had quality that could match us, and for me just stand at one in the half back line, but just top line, that's some of the things why I thought that they've been competitive and will be extremely competitive at the weekend, because just the way it's gone under the radar and everyone's just lined up for big Dublin easy six in a row. Beautiful place for Mayo to be.
Yeah. Who was your most regular Mayo opponent, Bernard? I know it would have changed over the years, and some days it's off the bench and other days starting. Was there a face you tended to see more often than not when you were on?
Jerry Cafferty, I would have spent a lot of time. Mark and I would have played in the, obviously some time in full forward or corner forward, and he would have marked me a good bit.
What was he like?
Yeah, he was a very physical, aggressive player. I got a lot of my success against Mayo on the spin, let's say. Obviously, 2013, I got two Pam goals in one of the semi-finals. Can't remember the year. I got a Fento, had a shot, and I turned it in. So, I had some good days, but also some tough days where they put me to the pin on my collar anyway, and a lot of the players on the pitch. But I always loved that day. The Brogans are from Mayo. Obviously, the Brogan name comes from Foxford. My granny and granddad Brogan are both Mayo, so I have a soft spot for Mayo, and they're very passionate supporters, and they always bring the energy, and they are very, very loyal, and the obviously this year is different and we won't have that energy around Croke Park and the crack, but I just think the occasion Mayo always bring it up to that, to the level it rightly should be.
Look at you, the politician here. You're like Charlie Haughey with relations in every county.
Just Kerry Mayo, just lucky enough.
Paul, I mean, sorry, Paul, you're coming in.
No, I was only going to say about the Mayo, you touched on something there, but the competition we had against that team when they were your fierce rivals. So you when you're in that kind of space of being, in competition, it's very hard to be friends, and but now ever since then, I got a chance, obviously, in my role to meet a lot of them. Myself and Tom Parsons are very close. And I get on with any one of them I meet now, you can just look back and now you can build that bond, but you have to finish the competition first before you can build that bond. And it's nice to be able to look back now. I have nothing but respect for them guys. They're an absolutely phenomenal team. And one of the things that always jumps out at me when you played them was, when you say they brought the physicality, what did that mean though? Mm-hmm. It was the fact that they had runners from deep, and they had their half-back line was arguably the best half-back line, in the game for that period. It was just, you had Lee Keegan, you had Donny Vaughan, you had Colin Boyle, but they all charged forward even from the full back line. So we were tagging runners. That was the thing with them. If you could tag the runners and not let them create the overlap, you always left yourself in with a chance. If you let them create an overlap, what happens inevitably when you have a team like that, you get the likes of Keegan getting up and getting a goal, or Donny Vaughan sneaking in for a goal. And so that brought a physicality that when you left the pitch, you're empty. And I was certainly empty playing half back. I found myself finding a very hard play against Mayo because I ended up chasing back more than I got a chance to go forward.
You retired me as a lazy inside forward. There was no space for me in the pitch anymore because they kept on attacking. So thanks for that, guys.
But I often look at those games. There's a couple of them on there actually recently. I think it was the 13 final that was on. And what you don't see, like, when you're playing, like, you know, Croke Park's a cauldron, right? And there's, if there's 82,000 people there, like, the whole, like, you know, atmosphere is just intense. And then you add in this intensity of Mayo, it just makes it very difficult to see what's going on. You kind of have a bit of a mist over you. But there's always space over the top. If we could have, like, just kind of maybe kicked the ball a bit more, you know, the pressure is right in front of you, and they create that kind of pressure in the middle sector. But if you can kick it into the zones and get it into the full forward line, you would have, that's why you would have got a bit of change, you know, when we did do that. But that's not always easy when there's someone, you know, hanging out of you or putting you under pressure to get the kick off. But and the last thing to say about the games against Mayo is that I always found that the quality of the games weren't as high. You know, it was just that the intensity was so high, and there was plenty of mistakes on both sides. And for that reason, they were ultra competitive. And that's why there's only 1 point here and there in them. So they weren't shootouts, but amazing. Like, they're, like, you know, our number one team that we had battles with over the last decade, you know. And there's hope that this weekend we're going to get a similar game. I think it'll be, I'm super excited for it anyway.
Yeah. I guess the point you're making is they're unforced errors. It's because of the pressure and the nature of those games. That's why. You know, nothing was given easy. Yeah. Because it's funny, Bernard, you know, you can sound very foolish if you say that Mayo team are one of the best teams that have ever played the game, because the easy riposte is, well, they haven't won in All-Ireland, so what are you talking about? But, I mean, they probably produced a quality of football on All-Ireland final day that would have beat, you know, 90% of teams down the years. Is the kind of consolation for them? That isn't much of a consolation at all, I'm sure.
Yeah, like, it's no consolation to them. And Barry, who'll be chatting to him later, will attest to that. Obviously, a fella who toiled many a great day, a game against us. And these guys want to win. And these guys are still hunting. The guts of the pack is still there. And they've refreshed it with a bit of youth and a bit of pace into the half-back line again, which is an added advantage. So, yeah, these, for an Aidan O'Shea, for Lee Keegan, these players want to get one of those to medals into their back pocket, and they'll be fighting tooth and nail and putting their lives on the line, I think, at the weekend. So yeah, like, it's no consolation. It is fact that team is one of the greatest teams that played the game. And it's unfortunate that obviously fortunate for us, but unfortunate that they don't have an All-Ireland medal. And we don't know what happened at the weekend, but definitely one of the greatest teams. And the personnel they had, the players, you think about players a year that they had, Andy Morans, Lee Keegans, the, like, obviously all the All-Stars they've had over the years, some of the greatest talent we've watched over the last 30, 40 years, you know.
So how do you see this Sunday, or, God, Sunday, strange to say it, how do you see this Saturday, Paul? I mean, Bernard reckons close. In the main, most of the previews I'm reading or listening to are struggling to make a case for Mayo.
I think that if you just look back to the most recent game, the most recent championship game was last year, a semi-final, and the first half, I don't think there was everybody in Croke Park, there was a tension in Croke Park at halftime, an excitement in Croke Park at halftime if you weren't, you know, a Dublin fan, and there was a tension if you were, because, you know, it just felt that Mayo, you know, where that was their time, and then like that, it was just gone in the second half. We've seen, I think, what was it, 12 minutes of, you know, just the best football we'd seen in quite some time. And so it just depends. I think if you go back to what I said previously, like, if we can, if Dublin can perform and make it a shootout, I think it'll be a Dublin win. If Mayo can make it a battle, it'll be as tight as all the rest of them have been over the last four encounters. There was a point in it. So, and them games can just go either way. So it just depends which kind of game it is. And I think the weather looks okay for the weekend.
Yeah,
so it should lend itself to good conditions. And but look, you know, it's going to be super exciting, because you're going to have high press football. And Dublin haven't experienced anyone who's gone high press on them yet this year. So that'll be interesting to see under, like, Desi's reign, how they adapt to it. But I just know that it's risk reward, as we know. But if they can, you know, go high press, and there's the one thing about high press is you can't have one person that's not doing it, because if they do have one person who's not doing it, Dublin will find the gaps. So it's going to be interesting to see. It's very, very, we're going to see a different Dublin because of it. So I don't know whether they're going to go, you know, and exploit it, or are they going to be kind of, well, let's see Let's see if we can defend this for us. So I always look to see the first 10 minutes of the game, and that's like, you know, even the first five, what are the matchups? And that tells you a lot about how a team are going to set up. You can't tell anything until you see that. So yeah. First 5 minutes, the pity is now, I always look that at a game, because you just go out, you have a look, who's marking who. That's all, that's as a player, I always think, like we would have been focused a lot on the matchups, right? And you'd know the guy inside out, you know the second guy who might be picking up inside out, or the guy who's going to pick you up. And what are their tendencies? Mm. What foot do they play with? Do they typically run with the ball and play a solo, or do they go for a hop? Do they give the ball off one touch, or do they kick it? You know, so nice. That's the matchups that I'd be always really interested in. So you don't get to, we need to see some more like high view footage from the likes of RTE and Sky that you can actually see that, because I know a lot of people going to games want to see those things. So but that'll tell a lot when we get into the first 5 minutes how they're going to go at it. But I hope just go helter skelter right from the start and make it a really entertaining game.
Yeah, I think that's been Mayo's probably biggest asset over the years. Is I heard Bernard Jackman on the rugby punditry there a while ago was talking about kill the kings, where in rugby you go after the main guys and try and take them out, and Mayo were epic at that. You look at Lee Keegan and Dermo's battles over the years, Dirk and lads, Colin Boyle putting forwards on the back foot by going forward. They always matched up really well, and we would have obviously, as Paul said, done a lot of work on that. And they were a very smart footballing team and strategically a well put together team. And again, they'd be looking to set themselves up to stop that shootout, as Paul said. If it's left to that, there's too much talent in the Dubs, I think, that'll reign through. There is the challenge, however, that Dublin have. Kieran Kilkenny's having an awesome year. He's like very that close to Fenton. Like he has been pipped for player of the year 3 years in a row. He is an awesome, awesome piece of work. And he just, even when you mark him hard and stay close to him, his engine it gets him away all the time. I think he's a remarkable footballer, and he chips in with 3 or 4 points in a game where you don't even think he's massively involved. Like he's very, very good. Lee Keegan, the matchups. For me is the most important piece in the first five. Genuinely, I'm not just agreeing with Paul on it for everything, but that's going to be key to this game. And the challenge that Mayo have is, who do they put there, which kings do they try and kill, and what clientele do they match up? You see the way Kieran Kilkenny and Conn have linked out. Conn is obviously an unbelievable footballer and was wasted inside in some of the games because the way the mass defence is coming back, or the way teams are set up, there's not as much ball into the free falling into the full forward line, and the weather isn't allowing him to turn and take on players like he had. So will a Keegan or Boyle, who will go on to Conn, who will go on to Kieran, what way will they set up for Fenton? Barry Moran, who will be chanting later, would love a crack at him, I'm sure, but they'll have a plan for him. So I think strategically how it's set up from the start is going to really dictate. And Paul said it there, like, how many times has Mayo figured out this Dublin team and put them to the pin of their collar from game management point of view? Yes. And last year Dublin figured it out because they just blew them away. But that's the key bit. Can they get that strategic part? The game management piece is going to win this game at the weekend.
Yeah, it's so interesting. The clock's coming against us. There are a billion talking points. I mean, even, geez, game management, we have Desi Farrell, you know, he's going to have an uneasy night's sleep on Friday because something's going to happen in this game and he's going to have to make a big decision under that pressure for the first time. That's there as well. Just to finish up, I have one last question for each of you. Bernard, you mentioned Conn there. I was flicking through your book and, geez, I mean, look, he's frightening. And there were two things, two just small observations you had of him even last year. One, it was in the dressing room at one stage and he had his notebook out. And like, we've come away a long way from the blue book days. You know, he's got his notebook out and he's reading intently his notes. So he's obviously a student of the game or of himself or his own mindset. And that's where he is at age 23. And then, you know, an amazing thing after having a phenomenal game against Mayo, those 12 minutes we're talking about in the second half last year, he came to you ahead of the final and said, listen, you've had lots of big days. Any advice for me? What can I do? How can I get better? I mean, the body and the talent with that mindset, you know, he's we're going to be talking about him in 10 years as a rival to Fenton. He's kind of scary.
Yeah, and I know that cliched word, humble and just decent person. Like I was watching him at one of the games. We were away. We were stopped in one of the cabins somewhere and we were having our meal and I was just doing a bit of rolling out. It was on, I think, the game against Cavan, actually. And I watched him for about genuinely 10 minutes, and he was just sitting there lying back with music in his ears and reading his notebook. And I went over to him and I said, what are you actually looking at there? Like, what are you, is there like a Beano magazine on the other side of it? Like, I couldn't believe he was talking for 10 minutes looking at it. And he was just going through our tactics, our plays, the marker he might be marking, what do they do? I didn't even read what he was doing, but whatever he had in there was obviously his homework or his analysis of the game that was ahead. And not a big game. It was a National League kind of damn squared. I don't even think we were actually able to get into the final at that stage. But and then, you say when he comes up to me, and I was shocked by that, obviously, in the year that I was trying to add value. I wasn't playing. I was trying to just add value for him to come up and ask me. And I have been played in probably more bad days than good in big finals, but I had a couple of good days. And he's just looking to be better. He's looking for any angle for him to be better and to give him a nod to help him on the day and perform for the team fundamentally. That's a testament to him and the group as well. It's not just him. There's reams of lads with that mindset, but that's the strength of the culture that's been built over the years with Pillar and Pat and Jim, especially over the last 7 years. It's just normal for those players to behave like that. And that's that world, as they say, that me and Paul where it was a bit foreign to, of the homework, the analysis, the students of the game, and the level of attention it takes and commitment it takes to be a footballer at this level.
Yeah, it's a frightening thought. Paul, before you go, I mean, you're here generally as a former Dublin player. Put on your GPA tie for a moment there. So the merger between the GPA and the WGPA has happened near unanimous approval at separate EGMs. So this seems like a significant move, like a very positive story. You know, the GPA get 3 million in government funding, the WGPA get 700,000. It feels like we're heading towards a more equitable situation. So your hopes for 2021 on that front? There's lots of talk of amalgamation between the three associations as well.
Yeah, no, I think it was a historic day for the players' associations. And just talking to Valerie, who's on the call later on, I'm sure have her thoughts on it too. And I suppose the way we're looking at it is that now it's the start of a journey, because we need to work towards, you know, equal investment, and it will take time. It's going to take effort on, you know, a lot on both of our sides, and now we're going to be one. And I just think it's a very positive step forward, and not just, I don't believe in sport, but or in the GAA, but in sport overall and society. I just think that it's a step that we need to take, and it's 2 years of journey we've been on to get us to this point. So right. I'm very aware of the complexities of it with bigger associations, but we just did what's within our control as a players' association, and it's what the players wanted. They voted on their feet, so it was a great moment for us. So very proud of that.
Great. Well, listen, pop back to us maybe the new year, because even on the fixture front, it looks like 2021 is going to be interesting, to say the least. Where are you going to watch the game Saturday?
Go on. Yours is more boring than mine, so I'm gonna go for it. I'm going down to the Fingal GA club. The family are going now. I'm gonna watch it there. So that's overly exciting, but it's better than Bernard's.
No, I was telling Paul, it's Kira's, my wife's girls' night out, so I'm on the couch with the twins, babysitting, and hopefully a bottle of beer, cheering on the guys.
Hey, listen, it doesn't sound so bad at all, fellas. That was great. Really enjoyed it. Paul Flynn, Bernard Brogan, thanks so much.
Thanks, Joe.
There you are. We've got, that's Dublin. That was great. And you can watch all of that back on all our social channels. We are here with thanks to Super Value. And you can be sure to check out Super Value's YouTube channel as well to see their latest support from the SOFA video series. You'll have seen these in and out of the matches, I'm sure, on the TV. Brings you into the homes of some of Ireland's biggest GAA fans. Generally, they're going ballistic as they watch their teams try and win matches. So you'll find all of that on the Super Value YouTube channel. We'll take a very short break, and then we're going to hear from the Mayo side.
The OTB Podcast Network.